Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is March the 31st, 2014, the last day of March. We're quickly getting on into April. But I am so glad that you're tuning in again to another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha, and I thank you for liking my fan page so much, and I am getting back to posting them up on iTunes now. So I had a little difficulties with that because I know a lot of people was like, oh, put it on iTunes. So I'm getting back into that. So you'll be catching them very soon. But today I am here with another special guest. Her name is Jen Whitman. She is a holistic health expert, celebrity health, lifestyle, career coach, thyroid, outer and mirror specialist. She is residing in the San Francisco Bay Area at the moment, but she just came through Atlanta, so hey, she caught the part of it all, so I'm glad that she did come through. Jen, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Technisha. Thanks for having me on the show.
No, thank you. It's an honor that you responded to my email and that you wanted to come on. I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I sure do.
Thank you.
So, Jen, let me ask, how did you become interested in health coaching?
Well, about 7 years ago, my husband and I were involved in a car accident with a semi-truck, and that really changed our lives forever. I used to be a chef, and I did a lot of very active things, and because of the accident or the injuries from this accident, I had to learn to take it slow and kind of reconfigure the way I was doing my own health. So after the accident and losing my career as a chef, I had to figure out what I was going to do now because I couldn't do all the walking and lifting and everything of being a chef. And I had quite an extensive background in psychology and in nutrition. So what I decided to do was take that plus my passion for cooking and turn that into health coaching to help others lose weight or heal from illness or, you know, reverse thyroid and autoimmune disease.
Okay, cool. So what's missing in current thyroid and autoimmune care?
Well, a lot, sadly. Many people go to the doctor with several symptoms, and they're all very general, something like they're very fatigued or they have a lot of stress. They might be gaining weight and they're not sure why they're not losing it, or maybe they're losing some hair, or their body just doesn't feel right. And what's happening is that people are going in and they're suspecting that their thyroid might be off because the thyroid is a very important gland that controls all of those things, your metabolism and your temperature and anxiety and things like that. And the doctors are just testing these a very limited range of tests. And so what's happening is a lot of people are being told, your thyroid is not normal, there's nothing wrong with your thyroid, you might be just too stressed, or you're a hypochondriac, or this is all in your head. So what's really missing in thyroid care is a comprehensive analysis of what's going on with a person, and also a comprehensive plan that includes nutrition and lifestyle changes in order to help people heal.
That brings me to a point when you say, oh, what the doctors usually tell you, they never give you, to me, a positive answer. And they love so many medications. That's why I love that you and my other guests who come on always talk about the natural supplements that you can actually take. I even caught a video that you did about sore throat. The garlic clove, the raw honey, and the cayenne pepper. I said I would try that because I usually try salt and pepper, but I said I would love to probably try that because I can't stand waking up in the morning and having a complete sore throat. Oh, it's awful.
Yeah, and there's so many solutions out there that are very simple and they're natural and they won't harm you and they don't involve medication, that and they're very effective, that we used to use before sort of the, you know, medical industry got really involved in our healthcare.
Now, when it comes to thyroid, what are some of the thyroid cancer types, Jan?
Well, in terms of what you're just looking for, I don't know, and there's not really a lot of different types of thyroid cancer. There just is thyroid cancer. And so the people are looking at different nodules. You know, they'll be looking at the thyroid itself. Because a lot of times when you have a thyroid imbalance or you have Hashimoto's disease, which is an autoimmune disease that affects the thyroid, you will have problems with your liver. And so when you have problems with your liver, things get redeposited back into your thyroid. So you'll maybe start to grow some nodules. And sometimes nodules are fine, and oftentimes you don't need to have your thyroid removed or you don't have to worry about the nodules, but if they turn cancerous, then you have to put special attention on them. Some people choose to get the thyroid removed. Some people reverse the disease with diet and lifestyle changes and don't have to get any of the thyroid removed, even if there is thyroid cancer, because they can reverse the cancer. So there's, you know, a lot of things that can be done in regards to that. But, you know, the medical kind of our current way of medicine is really just about focusing on either surgery or medications and not really getting to the root cause and trying to undo the disease itself.
Okay. Now, there are two types of thyroid. What are those two?
Two types of thyroid? You mean like the parathyroid and the thyroid?
Yes, because I had did a little research. I don't know if I was doing it correctly, but I was reading up there are two different types of thyroid in our bodies, which I didn't know.
Well, there's the thyroid gland itself, and basically there are several different ways it can get out of balance, and there are two major ways, and one is hypothyroidism and one is hyperthyroidism. So what happens is that the gland will either overproduce thyroid hormone or it will underproduce. So if it is overproducing thyroid hormone, that's when you're going to have hyperactivity and weight loss, extreme weight loss and anxiety and stress, and you may lose your hair, things like that. And then when there is underactivity of the thyroid gland, that's when you gain a lot of weight. Your body just really slows down. You're very fatigued. No matter how long you sleep, you feel very, very tired. And a lot of times you just have an impossible time losing weight, and then that creates a lot more problems. You know, you'll end up with high cholesterol or high blood pressure, things like that.
Oh, okay. Now, is there any way to really cure that?
Well, it really depends on who you're asking. So if you're asking a traditional medical doctor, oftentimes the answer you'll get is no. There's no cure for thyroid imbalance or thyroid cancer. There's nothing you can do about it. And their belief is that you just have to be on increasing doses of medication long term. And eventually that will lead to you having to have your thyroid removed, because oftentimes that will turn into thyroid cancer or cancer other places in the body. Whereas if you talk to naturopathic doctors, integrative doctors, holistic health coaches like myself, our take and the research is showing that these diseases can be reversed. Sometimes they cannot be eliminated, but they can be reversed, and the symptoms can actually be eliminated, but perhaps the root cause can't be reversed. It just really depends on the person. But through a lot of very simple dietary techniques and some lifestyle changes and maybe some supportive natural supplements, you can actually reverse the disease, and you can track that with your blood tests. So that question can be really challenging for people, because if they talk to their doctor is likely, if it's not a naturopathic or integrative doctor, that doctor's likely going to say, no, there is no cure. But if you ask other people, they will say, yes, it can be cured, it can be reversed, it can be eliminated.
Now, for the thyroid cancer, will you be able to still do normal activities that you're used to doing, working, going outside, playing ball?
Absolutely. I mean, once once that gets managed, like anything else, and as long as you change your lifestyle, so you don't want to continue to do the things you were doing before that got you to that point, right? So you want to change the diet and the lifestyle to support your body and your health, you should be able to go out and do the regular things, provided that you're supporting yourself.
Okay. Now, Jen, what websites do you recommend for people to go get printed material on thyroid cancer treatment?
Well, I don't really focus on thyroid cancer itself. I focus on helping people before it gets to thyroid cancer, or if they have thyroid cancer, I focus on supporting them. But there are a lot of, you can go to the National Thyroid Association, or you can go to about.com has a lot of information in terms of like the very traditional medical information on thyroid and thyroid cancer. What I provide in terms of resources are the natural things that people can do to actually reverse the disease, either prior to it turning into a cancer or after, once you have had cancer, either if you've had your thyroid removed or you still have the cancer, and giving people natural alternatives to reversing that and eliminating their symptoms.
Okay. Now, you said that you help people before they actually get there. Do they have to show symptoms before you actually help them, Jen?
Well, usually people do show symptoms, and what they find is that they're not getting any answers at their doctor's. So they're going to the doctor's office, and they are complaining of all of these different symptoms, and the doctor doesn't know what to do. So the doctor gives them one medication for depression, one medication for high blood pressure, one medication for high cholesterol, one medication for thyroid, but they don't really know what is actually going on. So I help people who come to me. A lot of times people just come to me for weight loss, and they're saying, you know, I'm trying so hard, I'm doing everything right with my diet, and I'm exercising a lot, and I can't lose weight. And then what we find out through proper testing and comprehensive testing oftentimes is that there's an autoimmune disease or that the thyroid is out of balance, but it's not showing up on the standard tests. So I have a lot of resources on my website for the kind of questions you need to ask your doctor, what kind of doctor you want to look for, what kind of natural support is out there. And then I offer my own home healing program and group coaching to help people who want to address that naturally.
Okay. Now, you're a chef as well, so how do you use your experience as a chef when coaching clients?
Well, that's the fun part. So I really love to create recipes and to teach people how to cook really simple and fast meals. I'm a mom and a busy one at that, and so I know the challenges that people face when they are trying to get a healthy and delicious meal on the table and they've got a lot of responsibilities with kids and work and everything. So I took my background as a chef, and I turned that into creating these cookbooks that people can use to lose weight or reverse thyroid and autoimmune disease. And I also help coach people. I design custom menu plans for people who want help looking at their own schedule and how they can fit in making and preparing the most nourishing meals for their family. So that's like the real like fun and exciting food part for me. And I'm going to start doing some videos on how to prepare things that you might think would be challenging to prepare but are super easy to prepare in 10 to 15 minutes, maybe even 20 minutes. So I'm going to start doing some cooking videos to help people realize it's not as complicated as you think.
Oh, awesome. It will be on your YouTube page that you already have?
Yes. So those are coming up. Those will be starting in April.
Oh, that's awesome. Jen, what are some things that you would not advise a client to actually eat? Maybe like sugars, I would think, and maybe probably more dairy products.
Yes. Oh, so definitely there are two, sugar for everybody, I would say, and anybody, no matter what's going on. When you eliminate sugar, your body is able to rebalance itself better, and it's also able to lose weight better, and it also can guide you better on telling you, your palate changes. So basically you'll want to eat more healthy food when you take the sugar out, because when you eat a lot of sugar, it messes up your taste buds. And so then you just crave more salt and more sugar, and then that can lead to the weight gain. So for everybody, I really recommend reducing your sugar intake, and especially through sugary drinks like sodas or pops, but or even fruit juices and stuff. But for people with thyroid and autoimmune disease, what they have to be really especially careful of is gluten. So gluten is found in breads and wheats and pastas, and basically what it does is it has a very similar molecular makeup to the thyroid. So if you have a leaky gut, which often you do if you have thyroid or autoimmune disease, your body thinks that the gluten you're eating is your thyroid, and it actually attacks your thyroid. It thinks it's attacking the gluten, but it actually attacks your thyroid.
Okay.
So eliminating gluten, meaning, you know, wheat, barley, oats, breads, pasta, that's really important to do, and also avoiding soy. So soy is very pervasive in our country because it's a very cheap farmed product, and it's also there's a lot of GMOs, which are genetically modified organisms, in soy. And so within soy, there are things there that actually hurt our stomachs and make us sick. So when people eat soy, especially those with thyroid disease, it actually affects your hormones. Soy is a plant estrogen, and so when you affect your estrogen levels, you can make yourself pretty sick, but it also really affects the way the thyroid functions. So I always recommend to people, if they do anything, they cut out gluten and they cut soy out of their diet in order to help with any, with especially thyroid disease, but also autoimmune diseases.
Okay. Now you have a solution now. It's called the Radical Teal Solution. Explain that to us.
So the Radical TLC solution, first of all, the reason I named it is that one of the things I realized was missing in medical care was just this kind of actual bedside manner by the doctors. There's no kind of love to the appointment. You go in, you're waiting forever. Once you get to the doctor, they rush you through, and you don't even know what happened by the time you left. You don't even know if you really got the answers you needed or whatever. So what I felt was missing was some love and some TLC in healthcare. So I created this home healing program called the Radical TLC Solution because it's about self-love, self-care, loving your body and your thyroid back to health, basically doing the things that would support your body so that it can heal. And what it is a home healing program that takes you through 6 weeks, day by day, what you need to do to start reversing thyroid and autoimmune disease. And then within it, it's comprised of 5 downloadable books. So the first one is the healing plan, the 6-week healing plan, and the second one's called Thyroid Love 101. And what it does is really dig deep into thyroid care and what's missing, and then also what kind of tests you need, what kind of doctor you need to look for. It also has printable sheets that you can bring to the doctor so that they know that you know what you're talking about and you're not crazy and these are the symptoms and this is what's going on with you. So that's in the second book. And then there's also a book for relieving symptoms. And that gives you natural methods and natural supplements for relieving some of your symptoms while you undergo the program. So as you're healing the body completely, you are relieving the symptoms as well. And then there is a pantry guide so that you know how to clean out your pantry so you can put the right foods in. And then there is a cook that includes 4 weekly meal plans and recipes for every week, and then a little like easy cheat sheet to how you can eat healthy quick meals, and then a lot of information on the kinds of foods that can support you in healing and the kinds of foods that can harm you. So that's what the Radical TLC Solution is.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good plan. I've seen some of the comments on there. Most people love that solution.
Yes, there's a lot of people losing a lot of weight on that solution, which is usually the first thing that people are looking for, because a lot of times with hypothyroidism, which is the most common version of thyroidism, is that they can't lose weight, and then their body just feels bad because of all the weight. So that program has been great. I mean, people are easily losing 15 to 35 pounds very quickly.
Oh, wow. Because I know mostly, what age does this normally start in women, Jen?
Actually, you'll find it most commonly in the 30s, but now we're seeing it in people who are younger, because what's happening is it can it happens a lot after childbirth. Usually leading up to childbirth, if somebody is having a very stressful pregnancy or a very stressful trauma happens before childbirth, plus they're dealing with some environmental toxins perhaps in their body, and they have a leaky gut because maybe their diet isn't great, what's happening is after childbirth, it's creating a situation that's very ripe for thyroid disease. So you'll find that it's a lot of moms who have thyroid disease, and it can start as early as your 20s. Some people have it when they're children, but that's very rare. The majority of people see it from their 30s and upward. So you'll see a lot of people who've been struggling for 20 years, and maybe they're 60 years old, or they've just found out that they were diagnosed and they're in their late 20s to late 30s.
Okay. Now, have you found any recurrent themes that clients come to you for?
I have. You know, a lot of people are coming to me for, first of all, the overwhelming stress. So they're finding that they're really stressed, but they used to not be like that, and they're confused as to why they're having anxiety attacks and panic attacks. So people come to me a lot for that, and also for the weight loss, as I've mentioned, that's a big one, and also for hair loss, because that, you know, is very disconcerting when all of a sudden you start seeing a lot of hair fall out. And what's very common with thyroid sufferers is that the outer edge of their eyebrows will thin or just fall off. And so if you notice that the outer edge of your eyebrow is getting very thin, that's when you want to maybe talk to your doctor. I actually had that same problem. So the reason I became a thyroid and autoimmune specialist is that after I had my child and had gone through a traumatic event like the car accident that I had mentioned and had hadn't been eating well, and I lived near an airport, so I was constantly breathing in the jet fuel, and that has a lot of toxic ramifications to your body. So what happened was I got sick with thyroid disease, and I couldn't find help anywhere. So I had to look everywhere, research everything, and I figured it out for myself, and that's what I'm offering people. So what I noticed in that period before I got diagnosed was that I was losing my eyebrows, and I was going to the woman who was working on my eyebrows saying, is there any reason why my eyebrows would be falling out? And she said it could be hormonal, and to talk to my doctor. And unfortunately, 12 doctors did not diagnose me. Finally, a 13th doctor who was an integrative doctor knew what was going on and understood that all of these symptoms were working together to create thyroid disease, and he diagnosed me correctly. And once I knew that, I could do the thing, and my eyebrows grew back, and my hair grew in, and I got much better. But a lot of people come to me for hair loss, weight gain, fatigue, and anxiety.
Okay. Well, see, now that's good. People are able to reach out with someone who actually experienced it and went and is actually going through it instead of talking to someone. To me, a doctor who may not have gone through it, but you just did the medical research, but to talk to someone who actually went through everything is better to me because you know what it's like.
Absolutely. I think that is kind of the big difference between what I'm offering and what the medical community is offering, is that a lot of times the doctors are treating this on a very theoretical level. They've only read about it, and then their education just says, okay, well, you need to medicate it this way or that way. But the difference is I've lived through it. I've been through the debilitating fatigue. I have had the hair loss. I had the weight gain. I felt where my body was chilled, and I couldn't maintain my temperature, and I had the anxiety, and I had to reverse it for myself. So I feel like people can call me and talk to me, and I actually have felt what they feel, and I know what they're going through, and I wish I had had that when I was going through this journey myself, and that's why I'm really motivated, and my mission is to support people with thyroid and autoimmune disease so that they don't have to go through this alone.
Yes, I do like that. Now, Jen, you don't have any books out on this, do you?
Well, the book is really the Radical TLC Solution, so it's a 5-book program, but it's just downloadable. So it's different than a hard copy book, which is actually on its way. We are going to get this into Amazon soon. But right now, for immediate help, you can download it.
Okay. Now, when did you discover Whole Foods?
Well, you know, I lived in Italy a while back. About 10 years ago, my husband and I moved to Italy because at that time I was a chef and I wanted to train in Italy. And when I went over there, I was just shocked at the difference in the way that they ate food and the difference in their products. When you go into a grocery store in Italy, you don't have all these processed foods. You don't have a million options. What you have are actual whole foods. So they would make the most delicious meals I'd ever eaten, maybe with five very simple ingredients, but they were five very good ingredients, and they were all very nourishing whole foods. And it really changed my perspective when I lived over there on what is nourishing to the body, what tastes good, and I just felt better over there because I was eating very clean whole foods that weren't processed and that didn't have a lot of chemicals in it. So I really discovered whole foods for the first time when I was in Italy back in 2003.
Okay. Now, I read a little bit about the slow food movement that you're a part of. What is that exactly?
So the slow food movement started in Italy, and it is basically the antithesis of the fast food movement we have here. So what we have, you know, with McDonald's and Carl's Jr. and Hardee's and Subway's and all these places is this kind of mission to get food as quickly as we can. And it usually, I have worked in all these restaurants, actually. I have worked in McDonald's and I worked in Subway and all kinds of chain restaurants before I became a chef. And the ingredients aren't the highest quality. They have a lot of sodium in it. They have a lot of genetically modified organisms or GMOs in it. They have a lot of pesticides and chemicals in it, in them. And so the slow food movement started in Italy because they were going to bring a McDonald's into a town, and that town did not want the McDonald's because they did not want to start this process of not eating real food. And so I'm part of this movement trying to promote with other people how you can make meals quickly, but they can be made out of whole foods, real ingredients that are organic and don't have all the chemicals and all the GMOs in it that are making people sick. So the slow food movement is a wonderful movement that has spread across the world now, where people are trying to come together and show others how they can easily nourish themselves with whole, unprocessed food, or real food, as they call it.
Okay. Now, you noticed a difference on your diet. What was that?
Between when I lived in Italy and when I was before, do you mean?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah, well, so, you know, when you're young, you feel like you're invincible. So I just ate everything I could ever, you know, I ever wanted to eat. And my diet before I moved to Italy consisted of things like Taco Bell and biscuits and gravy and Gatorade and all kinds of breads and things. And then but a lot of processed food. I would buy a lot of packaged goods, and I did a lot of convenience shopping. I ate a lot of fast food. And even though I was young and I felt invincible, I always felt very tired in the middle of the day, or every time I ate, I felt like I had to go take a nap. And I never attributed it to the food. I just thought, oh, that's how I am. But when I moved to Italy and I tried, you know, I ate their way and I didn't have access to all this processed food, my energy went up completely. And I just felt very vibrant and alive, and I just noticed the difference between what I was eating there. And in fact, a few years later, I was lucky enough to visit Japan. And that diet is so different than what we have here. I mean, you start off in the morning eating, you know, more savory foods like fish and broth and all kinds of things like that. And the 2 weeks we were there, where I felt the best I had ever felt in my entire life. And that really sealed in my mind that how powerful changing your diet is and how that can really create more energy, better sleeping, and a lot more vibrancy throughout your day.
Ooh, yes, and people don't be aware of that. We definitely have to stay off the processed food. That has a lot to do with it, too. It has so much chemicals in it these days.
Yeah, it's not the same processed food it used to be. I mean, even a TV dinner, when a TV dinner came out back, I think, in the 50s or 60s, is not the same type of TV dinner that we have today. I mean, that used to be made of real food, and now this is made of very processed food and food that can stay on the shelf for a long time. So if your food can live without molding or getting weird on the shelf for a long time, you don't want those chemicals in your body. But I also think what's important to note is that people have the idea that real food is more expensive than the processed food. And that's really not the case. You can find, you can coupon for it. You can find very affordable whole food. You can find very affordable organic food. You can also buy in bulk. There's lots of ways that you can make eating healthy less expensive. And I actually argue that it's on the whole less expensive because you don't have to go to the doctor as much because you're a lot healthier. You don't get sick as often. You don't miss work as often. You know, you don't have to go to the doctor and pay for those copays as much when you're healthy.
Okay, because I would have thought that trying to eat healthy does cost more, because I guess that's the way people have put that in people's, I guess that's the way the media have portrayed that in people's mind. You try to eat healthy, get the turkey sausage, they cost more than the pork sausage. And the only thing I don't like is when I mostly go to the store, there's a small section on the healthy stuff. I mean, yeah, I can find fruits and vegetables, but when it comes to my turkey, I can't hardly find that as much. But I will see pork and beef all day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think things are changing. It really depends on the consumer demand. So if more people get out there and they go to their grocery store and they demand the better food, the grocery store will eventually put it in there. I mean, unfortunately, to find healthy food, sometimes you have to dig around now if you're not able or willing to go to Whole Foods, because Whole Foods is expensive. It is a one-stop shop for getting all that healthy food, but it's very expensive. So, you know, you can bring coupons there and you can make it less expensive in different ways. But a lot of times for people, especially in, I'm from the Midwest, so I go home often and I have such a hard time finding healthy food there, and I have to go to 5 different stores to get what I would normally eat and what I would normally buy at one store here in California. So it can be challenging at first, but there are a lot of great guides out there, guidebooks on how to buy healthy food on a budget, which I have resources to those on my website for people. But it can be not only less expensive in cash terms, but it can be less expensive in the long term because your medical bills will decrease as you get healthier.
Okay. Well, hey, that's probably definitely true right there. You definitely do not want the medical bills.
Yeah.
We got too much diabetes out here, obesity, and people just don't think about that. Yeah, it looks good. I know I got away with eating ribs, but I try not to make it a habit of eating the same thing over and over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's important, too, to also eat in season. So when you do that, you're getting the most nutrient-dense food, and it's the most delicious. And then you're also adding variety to your diet by just eating, you know, what's in season as well.
Oh, okay. That's another good thought I can write down. Okay. So start eating in season. I would never have thought about that. Okay. Jen, I want to ask about the adrenal glands. What really affects the adrenal glands?
So two things really affect the adrenal glands, and one is just chronic stress. So when you we live in a society that just does not allow us to calm down anymore. I mean, it used to be 20, 30, 40 years ago that there was a very natural rhythm to the day. You would go to work, you would come home, there wasn't so much TV that everybody's just sitting in front of the TV. You'd have more family time together, you'd have kind of a rhythm to your day. And now with the smartphones and computers and being able to telecommute and all kinds of stuff, people are working 24 hours a day, and they're being expected also to produce more at work. And there's just a lot of stress on people today, and there aren't a lot of opportunities to calm down if you're not if you're not making those opportunities happen. So what happens to the adrenal glands is you, when you're stressed, you release cortisol. And when you start to release cortisol all the time and too much of it, you just basically burn out your adrenal glands, and that makes you very, very fatigued. And one thing that affects the adrenal glands a lot that people don't realize that is actually adding fuel to the fire is that they drink coffee or they eat a lot of caffeine or drink a lot of sodas with caffeine. And so what happens is you drink this caffeine because you want to wake up because you're so tired. But it creates this, it taxes your adrenal glands. And so instead what it does is it makes you more tired. It gives you a little jolt, but then it makes you more tired in the long run. So then you have more caffeine or more sugar or more bread, whatever you're craving to pick your energy up. And then that creates the cycle again. So what people never believe me at first, but my clients, when I ask them to, that I say, okay, this week we're going to go off coffee. I teach them how to do that gradually so it's not as painful for them. But when people eliminate coffee from their diet, within a week, they feel like they've had more energy than they've had in years. And they can't even believe that the coffee was part of the problem. And I love coffee. I'm a huge coffee drinker. I was before I got sick. And it really made a difference when I stopped drinking coffee. My energy went up so much. Now, the first couple of days were a little rough. I'm not going to lie about that. That can be a little bit of an adjustment. But once your body adjusts, your adrenal glands are supported, and, you know, you just start to feel much better.
But, Jen, is it really that bad for you? Because sometimes in small amounts, caffeine usually isn't a problem for most people, though.
It depends on, now, and this is something, and a really important point that we should make here, is that, first of all, each person's body is completely different and very unique. So what might work for one person won't work for another or may not work for another. So what I always encourage people to do is to really listen to the signals that their own body is giving them, because no matter what, even if somebody has a 100% success rate with, you know, a doctor says this medication always works, it might not always work. And so sometimes people get, you know, a little pushback from a doctor when they come in and they say, well, this medication gave me all of these side effects, and the doctor kind of blows them off when really for their body, that medication didn't work. So that goes the same with food. So people who do not have a leaky gut and do not have adrenal fatigue can definitely handle small amounts of coffee, and coffee can be very beneficial. But if you have thyroid disease, autoimmune disease, diabetes, any inflammatory diseases of the gut like IBS, ulcerative colitis, rheumatoid arthritis, anything like that, your gut and your adrenals are taxed, and right now they're not in the strongest place. So what you really want to do is eliminate that coffee so you get your energy back and so that you can support your body in healing. And once your body heals, then you can go back to trying a little cup of coffee here or there. But what I find with people is that once they're done with the coffee, they feel so much better, they don't want to go back. And there are some really wonderful coffee substitutes nowadays that taste identical to coffee. So you get that smell and that feeling, that, you know, that cozy feeling when you have that nice warm cup of coffee, but you don't get the negative effects if it doesn't work for your body. So even now I can tolerate coffee just a little bit. I choose not to drink it because I feel so much better when I don't, but I can tolerate it, whereas before when I was very sick, I couldn't even have any of it, and it really made me feel sick. But before I was sick, I could tolerate it fine, and I didn't have any problems. So it brings me back to that point of it's very important to look at your body. You are a unique individual, and your body will tell you if you listen to it what it needs and what it does and what doesn't work for it.
Okay. And I know that we're mostly talking about coffee as being addictive, but also tea has a decent amount of caffeine as well as chocolate. For all my chocolate lovers out there, it has a little bit, but probably not as much as coffee, but that doesn't mean you could go out and eat all the chocolate you want. But those are just
right.
Some things. Those are just some things people need to consider as well.
Absolutely. And, well, caffeine shows up a lot in soda and pop. So, you know,
yes.
People need to realize that too. So it's tea, coffee, chocolates, and sodas, and even those energy drinks. So people need to be careful with those.
Well, Now, Jen, I know you mentioned that you tell people that they, your clients, as far as it goes, that you tell them, okay, we're going to not drink coffee this day or probably the next day. But how do you really get people to overcome their caffeine addiction?
Well, it's definitely through the diet, first of all. You know, I don't ever start people on eliminating the coffee right away. So first, I ease them in with changing their diet. So first of all, their diet becomes more supportive. And when that happens, as you're weaning off the coffee, your body actually physically doesn't need it because you're eating other things that help support your body. When you get more nourished with your foods, then you have more energy. So then you don't really notice this caffeine and the addiction kind of goes away. But I definitely wouldn't say if somebody's drinking 2, 3, 4 cups of coffee a day, just stop drinking coffee. No. We wean them off slowly. So you might start with 4 cups a day, then the next day you're going to do 3, and then the next day 2, then the next day 1, then a half a cup, then a fourth a cup, than nothing, you know, and then maybe a coffee substitute.
Now, you know, I know that you said certain foods are not as good for you when you have the thyroid issues, but can strawberries be bad too?
They can be. Strawberries contain a compound called goitrogens, and goitrogens are things that are compounds that can create a goiter in your thyroid, and that is when you may have seen pictures or people who have a almost it looks like a little baseball sitting in their throat. That can often be, that's a goiter. And it really depends on the person's individual sensitivity to things like strawberries or spinach or cruciferous vegetables. But strawberries can be a problem because they do contain compounds that can be goitrogenic. So you just always, with your own body, want to test that. I know that I limit strawberries, but when they're in season, you know, I enjoy them. I really believe in moderation. So, you know, with anything, you don't want to overdo it.
Oh, yes, definitely. That's what a lot of people tell me. You can eat your sweets, but just don't make it a habit. So I try not to eat a sweet. I might just eat it once or twice out of the month for that one day, and then that's it. I'll just wait for a while because I don't want it to become an addictive situation.
Yeah. Well, and sugar is highly addictive. It's 4 times more addictive than cocaine physically. So people are very easily addicted to sugar, more so than, you know, hard narcotics. So it is very good to be aware and to be very conscious of how often you are eating sugar.
Oh, yes. Now, Jen, it's sometimes hard when you are on the run and you want to pick up something from McDonald's or Burger King. What are some suggestions that you would give people on that? Because I know it's a lot of fat, probably gluten in most of all these foods.
Right. Well, I just experienced this myself as I traveled across the country, and you're in airports and you're dealing with limited options, or you're on the run and you're in between things. One thing I do is I'm always prepared. So in my purse, I always have a little baggie with soaked nuts. I'll bring a banana with me, or I'll bring another piece of fruit, or I sometimes bring my own tea water, whatever it is. I make sure I'm prepared. I actually take, you know, a few minutes every day to think about, okay, where do I need to be? Am I going to be out? And then if I'm going to be out at a restaurant, and let's say it's not something I can choose, I have to meet somebody somewhere and it's not a restaurant I would normally choose, I really stick to just eating some protein and 1 or 2 vegetables and eating that while I'm out. So let's say the only place you're going to go to is McDonald's, and that's all you can do, then, you know, which I obviously don't advocate because of all the chemicals used, but let's say you go there, I would get a burger without the bun, and I would get a salad, and that's what I would eat while I was there, if that's where, you know, where I was. I would always be looking for protein and two or more vegetables that I could eat while I'm on the go, and that will make you feel so much better than having the actual hamburger with the bun and just some fries and then a milkshake, you know?
Oh, yes. And then, to me, it's good to sometimes eat at home because you could choose your own low-fat and low-calorie ingredients to prepare your meals. Normally, like my restaurant that I work at, the Marriott, we do have foods that are gluten-free or that might be healthy, but sometimes you got to be careful of those foods because they could still contain, like, a high amount of fat or calories, or they could be detrimental to someone's health if you're eating them on a regular basis. So I think eating at home is one of the best ways to have a healthy lifestyle.
Absolutely. I mean, the more you can eat at home, and I really advocate using the slow cooker or the crock pot, because lots of times you can put a meal in there in 10 minutes in the morning, and then you come home and dinner is cooked. So you don't have to, you know, have a really labor-intensive or very hard meal to eat. It can be really easy just to put something in the slow cooker and then have something nourishing, and it's just as fast as taking your kids through a drive-through, and it's better for everybody to be eating something like that.
Yes, and it really drains your money, too. Now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it can really save you money to make food at home, and there's so many easy ways, which is what I try to offer family-friendly meals in my cookbooks, because everybody's busy no matter what's going on, but there's always a way to be eating healthy. And if you have a moment, I'd like to talk about fat for a second. Do we have more time to chat about it? Okay.
Yeah, so, all the time.
One thing about fat is that they're finding now in the research that low-fat foods can actually cause more harm, and that what you want are high-quality fat foods. So you want to be eating fat. You just want to be eating the right fats. Low-fat can create all kinds of, because it's like processed, and because of a lot of low-fat foods have chemicals in them, and it's just not nourishing to you, low-fat food isn't always the best way to go. Now, lean meats are great. It's great to stick with lean meats, but it's really important to have good fats like avocado, coconut oil, olives, olive oil. Even, you know, if you roast a chicken, eat the chicken skin with the meat, because all of this stuff was meant to work together, and a lot of vitamins and minerals are only soluble in the fat, meaning they'll only dissolve when you have fat in your body. So if you're taking something that is a fat-soluble vitamin, but you don't have any fat in your diet, then that vitamin won't absorb into your body. So I think it's very important that people understand that they don't need to be afraid of fat. They just need to be eating the right fats, which I go into, you know, deeply in the Radical TLC solution. But, you know, basically the food industry and the advertising around it made everybody deathly afraid of fats. But fat is actually a very important thing to have as part of your diet. It helps with your cholesterol. It actually helps with your hormone production. It's something very important to have in your body, but as long as you're eating the right things, it's not a license to just go out there and eat the fattiest, yuckiest food ever. You know, you have to eat the right types of fat.
So what are we looking at for the good fats? Because I mostly heard, like, coconut oil, avocados, the nuts, the olive oil, some of your good fats.
Right. So those are all good fats. The olive oil, coconut, avocados, nuts. I always recommend people soak the nuts the night before and then eat them, because there's a little anti-digestive element in nuts, and that hurts our bellies. So if you soak them, they're better for you overall, and they won't hurt your belly as much. But nuts are great fat. Also, salmon depending on what's going on with the person, there's something called polyunsaturated fatty acids, and there are foods that are high in these, what's called PUFAs. And when you have those, it just depends on the person. Some people can tolerate them well, and it's a really good fat for them, and some people can't tolerate them. But if you just really stick to the basics of olive oil, coconut oil, broth, you know, if you put bones in a pot of water and make a mineral-rich bone broth, it'll bring the fat and the nutrients out, and that broth can be very supportive to your body and your belly. So those are the real main high-quality fats.
Is there a problem with ice cream? Or is that a good saturated fat?
If you had real ice cream, you know, like kind of, if it's not laden with chemicals, if it's like a real, and it has, you know, kind of those in those ice creams that have like two or three ingredients, and it's just made from, you know, whole fat milk and eggs and whatever, those kind of ice creams can be fine, obviously in moderation, because there's generally a lot of sugar in them. So the sugar is what creates fat. Fat does not create fat in your body. Sugar does. So it's the sugar when you're losing weight that you really want to be aware of. And so something like ice cream, if it's like a real kind of homemade ice cream or an ice cream that's made with natural ingredients and very few ingredients, you could have that in moderation and really enjoy it. But I wouldn't recommend that as like a part of every single meal, because that's not a good enough fat to eat, because there's too much sugar in there, and that would lead to weight gain.
Oh, wow. It's amazing that all the stuff that you have to keep up with, but you put that in your radical solution.
Right. No, because it is very confusing. I have an entire chapter called Food Confusion, because it's very confusing what is healthy for us and what isn't. And what people need to understand is that the food industry, they want to sell products to you. So they're going to tell you certain things are healthy for you that really aren't, because what they're trying to do is get you to buy their product. But if we really think back to that generation that now these people are in their 90s and 100s and before, what those people were eating, those whole foods, and they ate a lot of fat and they ate a little protein and they ate a lot of vegetables, those people have less disease, have lived longer, that generation, and we need to get back to that kind of food and not the processed quick foods that we're eating that have a lot of chemicals and stuff.
Yeah, and you're right, but I feel like this. First, the food is good for you. Then years later, people tell you it's not good. Then they come back and say that was incorrect. And then all of a sudden, we run around with panic and we want to ban everything.
Right.
I mean, you got to use your common sense. You can't listen to individuals, and you are right, Jen. Every time they put something out here on TV, they're really definitely getting to our children. Our children see this stuff, ooh, I want, because I told my children yesterday when they saw the, commercial, it was a cook commercial, Oreo commercials or something like that. No, Chip Ahoy. She thought, oh, wow. I said, don't think about it. Mm-hmm. About it. That's the problem now in my household. Your father loves to buy all this junk food, and then he looks at me. And I love the way my husband will make something that's not really good for you sound like it's good, like he was eating salt and vinegar chips. Oh, this is really good. I said, that's amazing how you could just turn that bad stuff around and try to make it look like it's good. Just have one chip. I'm going to do one chip, and that's it. That's it. I'm really trying hard to get everyone on the same track, but they're not following me, Jan.
I feel you, because that's something I work with a lot with my private coaching clients, is how to get the whole family on the same page. And I talk about that a lot also in the Radical TLC Solution, because sometimes within your family you have a saboteur, and that person is making it very hard for you to stick to your healthy diet. So I talk to people and get everybody on board when I work with them on how we're going to make it healthy. You know, it's fine for the adults. If they're going to make a choice and they don't want to be healthy, that's their business. But when you're talking about your kids, you really want to set them up so that they don't have disease or they don't have diabetes or obesity and stuff like that. So I usually, when I speak to the men, I kind of speak to them in terms of, you know, this is going to affect your kids positively if we change the diet. And if you're not on board, they're not going to be either, because you're the leader. They're looking toward the parents to make sure that they're, to know how to make the right decisions.
Exactly, and that's what they're doing. They look at us for that example, and we're not giving them that. Okay, they see mommy working out, trying to eat healthy, but daddy's doing that, so I guess we're going to go daddy way, because the candy sounds really good.
Right.
And we're just going to go that way. But, you know, it brings me back to that time. I think this was back in the 1960s when they said that all cranberries were not good for you, and they moved that to try to ban that. But people just kept on eating them.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it wasn't the cranberries at all. It was just the ones grown in a specific manner. So I listened to the news, you know, especially when it comes to organic foods. They not too long ago has mentioned, oh, organic food's not good for you. So it does confuse you. Like, okay, if they're not good for me, then what is good for me? And should I just stick to fruits and vegetables? And then when you say that, then those are not good for me. It's like the media just really just twist your head around. And I tell people, hey, either way, I'm going to eat. I'm not going to sit here and starve trying to figure out what is bad and what's not.
Right. No, and you need to eat, and it is hard. I mean, that's why there are people like me and others out there who are going through all the research, and they're seeing the results in their clients and saying, no, this is the way to eat. But if people can just remember to eat real whole food, that's the key. If it's in a package or in a box, try and avoid it.
Yes. You do. You have to avoid it. I used to look at the doctors, and they'll tell you, especially the grain tortilla wraps, those are not as healthy as you think. So you just have to be careful. Like you said, you got to look at all the facts, and you have to use what God gave us, common sense.
Right.
And, well, you just can't let the media play a part into everything because, I mean, that's what they do. That's what they're here for, to play off our emotions. And that's exactly, and they do it every time. That's why we have so much, many people out here who have obesity now. Listen to them, oh, good for you. Put on those bag of chips, got all that sodium in it.
Right.
So I do agree with you on that, Jen. I definitely do. It's just getting ridiculous. But, Jen, this is what I really want to know. Why do you think why is it that we don't know what actually to eat? Is it because we're not educated enough, or we're not doing our own research?
I think it's a combination of things. I mean, for sure, we're so much busier. Who has the time to really track down the research and figure out what's good to eat or not? Everybody's very busy, and people are just trying to get through the day. So that's one thing. And then also the messages that we get from TV and from all the advertisements are very confusing, and people don't always understand that. The people saying maybe that that soy is really really beneficial for you, those are probably the people making money off of soy. So, you know, and sometimes when people do the research, when you see who's actually paying for the research, you find out that it's a food company that paid for that research. So you're not even sure if that research can be good or not because they had an invested interest in it, right? So I think it's just that people are confused, people are stressed and busy and don't have time to figure out what is right, and that's why I try and keep it to a very simple rule. Just don't eat anything that's in a package, you know, just eat real food. Get a real, you know, get real meat, get real vegetables, real fruits, you know, and stick the real nuts. Get those whole foods, and then you'll be fine. You don't even have to calorie count, and you don't even have to think about it. When you have to think about it is when you're going through the aisle and you're looking at processed food. You first have to find out if it was organic or not. You have to find out if there's chemicals in it or not. You have to find out if there's genetically modified organisms in it or not. That's when it gets confusing. But if you stick to that outer aisle, that outer edge of the grocery store, and you don't go in the middle, you'll be safe.
Exactly. And I think most people get confused, like, what's the best diet? No, it's not that type of question we should be asking. What's the best diet for each person? Because everybody's body type is totally different. Everybody cannot eat the same thing.
Right. And really we shouldn't be even talking about diets. It should just be about eating. You know, there's too much emphasis on diets and dieting. And if you're having to do that, then you're not eating real food. So it's just about eating real, whole, nourishing food. And that's what's going to make you feel good.
Exactly, because that's why people always say, oh, Kim Misha, you're going on a diet. No, I'm not going on a diet. I'm just switching up my food. It's not about dieting. Dieting causes you to suffer.
Right, absolutely.
I still want to eat. No. No, I don't want to do the diet. No, that's not for me.
No, and people don't need to. If they're eating real whole food, your body just, the weight goes away, things balance out, and you never have to calorie count. I don't have a scale here, and I don't watch calories. I eat as much food as I want, but it's all good food, so I'm trim, I'm energized, I feel great.
Exactly. Well, Jen, is there any other information you'd like to give our listeners out here today?
No. If they have any questions, they can find me at The Healthy Plate, or they can find me at Thyroid Loving Care, and that's thehealthyplate.org and thyroidlovingcare.com. But I'm always around and available for questions.
Okay. Well, Jen, I really appreciate you for being on this show today, and thank you so very much. And you and your family have a blessed one.
Thank you, and you too. It was such a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you.
up next to my loved one, I have a special young lady on today. Her name is Jill Vanderwood. She is going to teach us about the fear of public speaking and how to overcome that. Because a lot of times we have these issues and we get nervous. So we're going to take a and we're going to be right back.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey, the dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
All right, well, we're back with another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. And on the line we have Jill Vanderwood. How are you, Jill?
I'm great, Technisha.
Well, I'm glad that we were able to get it in. I wasn't sure. I said, oh, I hope Jill ends up coming on today because I know you said Monday and Tuesday is 3 day.
It was kind of a 30-minute notice.
Yeah, it was. So what I'm going to end up doing, because, see, this is still archiving. Regardless if it just went on cutoff, I'm still going to add all the information in, and that way people can still listen. Regardless, that's one thing I like about this radio show, because you be thinking it on cutoff. It cuts off at that certain time, but people can still hear it. So that's I do love Blog Talk for that. Like, it just don't cut it off completely. Yeah. So Jill, how you doing? How is everything today? Where are you located?
I'm in Utah.
Okay. How's the weather?
We have a little bit of snow on the ground. And the sun's out today.
Oh, my. I tell you, we went through a winter storm ourselves down here. It was kind of awkward because, of course, the South don't get that type of issues. We'll get snow and then it goes away. But this one wanted to come with the ice, and I think that is what alerted everyone, the ice. But I stay home. I said, I'm going to use what God gave me, that common sense, and just stay on home and don't worry about it. But I just wanted to let everyone know that Jill is the author of Shaking Behind the Microphone, Overcoming the Fear of Public Speaking. She is also a known Toastmaster, as I am. So Jill, it's good to meet another Toastmaster.
Oh, that's great.
I know. I got to get on my speeches. They've been getting on me, but I think they've been letting me off the hook because of this. But they're having an event on the 12th of next month, and they're like, oh, you got to be there. I'm like, yeah, they're going to get me for not finishing my speeches. But, Jill, I just wanted to say I love your book. Can you tell us about it?
Okay. Well, I wrote the book because I had a fear of public speaking. And it was crippling me. Most of my life I wouldn't speak in front of people that I didn't know at all, or I would only speak to just friends. And when I was in a group, I was just lost. And if I had to get up and give a talk at all, it was just too much for me. I would shake, my voice would quiver, my face would turn red, and I decided after becoming an author that I needed to learn how to speak.
So
the first thing I did, go ahead.
Okay. No, go ahead, Jill.
The first thing I did was to volunteer to teach a workshop to other writers, and I had 6 months to prepare, and I was in a panic, and that's when I joined Toastmasters.
So what was the childhood like? Did you have this fear growing up?
I did. It started about fifth grade. I was in a classroom. I had moved from the country to the city, and I was being bullied by a lot of the kids in my classroom. And I had to get up and give a talk. And the first talk that I remember giving, I had unbuttoned my skirt, and when I stood up, my skirt fell all the way to the floor. And I was afraid that if people saw that I wouldn't be able to speak at all.
Oh, my.
I looked around and nobody saw it for some reason, but it was still enough to shake me up really bad.
And I can imagine. I went to school with this young lady, and when she would get up in front of the class, she would always start fidgeting with her. She'd be like, and you could just hear it. She just starts shaking, and you'd be like, what is wrong? But when she sat down, it was perfectly fine. Getting up was the problem, and the teacher would actually have to tell her, don't worry about it. I don't know how she passed, but I guess they did that on their own time. She would just say, no, just go sit down, because it was very sad.
Yeah.
So how did you overcome this fear of public speaking?
Well, the first thing, like I said, was go to Toastmasters, where everyone else is there because they also had a fear of some kind, and they're all at different levels of overcoming that, and it's kind of a small group, and you have to practice. Mm-hmm. You cannot just sit there and be a spectator.
No, you can't. I mean, you could get away with it for that first day, but they're going to get you. You're going to be the odd count, the grammar or something, and that's what I was afraid of. I was afraid to be the grammarian because I was like, shoot, I know I take communications and journalism, but to correct someone else, that's the hard part. And I would tell them, how am I going to correct someone else? I barely even try to correct myself because I'm trying to make myself perfect. But I did well one day. I sure did. I did pretty well, and I was proud of myself.
Oh, good. Well, the very last thing that I think that I did to overcome this fear was to go skydiving. And it sounds really weird, but I knew that if I could go skydiving, that it would help me with my other fears. So when I went skydiving for a fundraiser, I had that in the back of my mind. And ever since then, I can tell myself, you're not afraid of these people. You went skydiving from 12,000 feet. So that really helped to overcome most of the fear.
Wow. And it does work. My plans to get in Toastmasters were not because of fear of public speaking. I was going there because I was doing a project on something. It was pertaining to my field, which was communications, and my professor told me to get out and explore other options in regards to this project, and that's how I did. And I ended up calling them, and all of a sudden they aired me on as a member, and I haven't stopped since. But every now and then, I won't tell a fib. I do get nervous, I guess, because I need to keep continuing. Because it's totally different when you're talking to people and their face are on the phone, and I'm a server. I could talk to you all day at the table, Jill. But sometimes getting up, like, okay, I'm up talking to other people. Oh, Lord. Don't try to rush. Don't sound like you're scared or nervous. And then all that. Not the fear, but just the idea of other people looking at me like, okay, it's coming back. Now I'm feeling scared again. So I try to break out of that habit.
I even face it once in a while. I think I'm over it. And then all of a sudden I'll get that nervous spell right at the beginning. And I'll be scolding myself in my mind. You've done this so many times. Why are you doing this? And usually it only takes about a minute, the first minute, and then I'm fine. But I do face it once in a while still.
Oh, yes. I love every bit of it, though. It's a great organization. Them, like you said, they're not alone. And we all know the importance of public speaking. And it does seem to be the greatest fear, but I'm sure if we all go skydiving, that's the biggest fear, because my other fear is, well, I don't like snakes, of course, but I don't mind picking up worms, and I would say skydiving, because I don't like heights. So that that would be definitely an issue for me. But, Jill, the research that went into this book is incredible. How were you able to get all this research, because there's different stories in here. This is on people, their own stories, other stories, people losing their job because of not speaking.
Well, I collected stories by putting out ads on the Internet, and the first one was Are you among the 75% of people who are afraid of public speaking? And I had all kinds of response. All these people were people that I didn't know, and they came to me because I was writing this book. So I was really thrilled each time I'd get a new story to go in the book. And they go from one end of the spectrum to the other. Some people are teaching public speaking, and they've never been afraid. And then there's other people who had to overcome all that fear to get to where they are, and then now they're speaking for people all the time.
Well, yes. And do you ever feel that you're in Toastmasters when you listen to other people? For instance, when I have meetings at my job, I'm listening to my supervisors, and I hear them saying and I'm like, oh, boy, look at all these arms. You will definitely be called out in Toastmasters with all that. And I have a tendency to do it on my radio shows, and I think it comes out naturally because we get comfortable.
Yes. Well, I notice it all the time with people that are speaking because I've been the master, and all master, whatever they call it. And I'm always listening for that when I hear somebody speak. And you hear it all the time on the news or, you know, people that on the radio you hear,
And I think that's what makes me feel comfortable. I'm like, wait a minute. I hear this reporter saying, so I don't feel too bad now. I was because that's what I want to be, a news reporter. And people make that as a perfection. You have to be a perfectionist to get that position. And then when I hear other people do it, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm beating myself up that bad. And here I hear an anchor on there, and you could just hear the palms. Like, okay, I'm not doing too bad. I just need to tighten up. But my God,
helps to listen to yourself, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It really does help because now my main thing is enunciation. I have to make sure because I have a real Southern drawl, as most people would tell me. And I had my friend; she was coaching me. She works for CNN. She works for CNN, and she was helping me. And it's hard when you're actually listening to yourself, like, okay, did I hit that ing? Am I breathing too much? Because I even heard Buck Lamford on Fox 5 one day. He was breathing. I was like, I hear that breathing. You can hear the gaps thing when they're talking. And so I'm very cautious. Yeah, it makes me aware, and I think that was my main problem, Jill. When I would do my internship and I have to do my stand-ups on camera, I'm like, oh, my God. Tom Jones would be like, what are you thinking about? I said, I'm thinking about the way I'm speaking. And now I'm getting nervous because I don't want it to come out incorrectly. I don't want to say, oh, did she just pronounce that that way? So I'm very cautious now, but I don't want that to hinder me.
Uh-huh.
But, Jill,
Go ahead, Gil. I was just thinking, I was talking to quite a few people on the radio, and most of the radio interviews viewers will tell me that they are also nervous about public speaking. They can get on the radio and talk because they know nobody's watching them. But when they get out in public, they're afraid, just like everyone else. And people think they're kind of snobby because they don't want to speak publicly. But actually, they're just afraid of it.
Yes. But, you know, I think it's still a etiquette to radio and public speaking. You still need to be cautious of how you speak on radio because you don't want to become too comfortable because if you do, then that starts to portray on the outside, okay? But usually they say you write as you speak. Which I don't, I don't really find that to be true because I might speak a certain way to my family, but my writing skills are totally different when it comes out. But Jill,
I think you watch every word.
Yes, you have to be careful. Oh, but Jill, this is what I want to ask. What kind of research did you have to do in order to get your book together?
It was mostly just finding people that had stories to share. I had my story, and I wanted to see if I was the only one out there. And I wanted to hear what other people had to say who had gone through the same thing, because I feel like if you have a lot of different stories, then it shows that the person is not alone. They'll find one that really sounds like them, and maybe it'll help them more.
I know. I like Dan Nanny's story in the book, Comedy Changed His Life, and usually that looks like that would be a solution for most people. Because if you could make somebody laugh standing in front of them, then that would definitely overcome. I say, okay, you're laughing. Now I feel comfortable. But to me, you just got to be comfortable in your own skin when you're speaking.
Yes, Dan Nanen was a person that had to demonstrate for Intel Corporation, and he was afraid up on stage, so he took comedy. And he became a stand-up comedian, and he's even performed for the President of the United States now.
Wow. See, that's awesome. You never know where it might take you. That's why it's good to do things like Toastmasters. Try to work on it, because you don't want that to hinder you not speaking in front of other people. And like you said, people have even lost their jobs because of that. Oh, I'm not speaking in front of this crowd of people. Mm-mm. Well, if you don't speak, then you don't get paid, and you're going to lose your job. So,
yes.
Yeah, it's a big issue. And like I said, that young lady who I grew up with, I hope that she did overcome it, because that's a bad thing. When you really cannot speak, it becomes a problem. What did you get?
And it holds you back.
It does. You know, where did you get the inspiration to actually want to write this book?
Well, I was thinking about what book. I've written several books, and mostly for children. So I was thinking about what can I write next, and it just dawned on me how far I had come from not being able to speak in front of anybody to being able to speak in front of people in groups. So I wanted to share that with other people, because when I was looking for a book on the topic, I couldn't find the book I wanted to help me. So I thought maybe I could write the book to help other people.
Well, that's a good thing. Now, I know that you did give 10 simplified points of public speaking, and those were some good points, especially when it comes to writing speeches. And you need to find, they always would tell us in Toastmasters, find something that you are comfortable with talking about. Know your subject, because that's one thing to get up there for a certain amount of time and you don't know your subject. That's really embarrassing, and it will only bore the crowd. And, Jill, this is what I wanted to say. I love the fact that they do keep you on a time limit in Toastmasters, because sometimes we have a tendency to just go on and on and on and don't know when to actually stop talking. So I love that they have speeches that go from 8 to 10 minutes. Within 8 to 10 minutes, you should have been able to get your point across and be done with it, and even have time for questions.
That's true. But when you're speaking in the real world, you probably may be speaking an hour and a half or, you know, a long time. So at least if you practice in front of people doing the short speeches, you will be ready to get your subject going longer. And if you know the topic really well, you can talk no matter how long it is.
Exactly. You know, they said, what you think about hypnosis? They said that's another option to overcome fear of speaking.
Well, I've had a lot of people tell me that if I can't overcome this fear, I'm going to go to a hypnotist. So I decided to interview a hypnotist, and he has worked with people from all walks of life and from all different types of fears. The same fear might not affect everybody, but it comes out in the same way in public speaking. So he has had a lot of success with doing some hypnotism with these people, and he doesn't put them under. He just talks them through different aspects of their life and gets them to some time when you felt really proud, then he uses that same emotion to bring into the experience where you're afraid. And a lot of people have had success through that when they can't find success anywhere else.
Yes. Now, what are some of the causes of fear? Because some people might think they might make a mistake.
Some of the people say that they're afraid because they don't think they have anything important to say. Like maybe the audience is really educated and they're not. on the topic, so they feel inferior. Or some people feel like maybe they're going to trip on the way up to the and make a fool of themselves in some way. And my fear was I didn't like people looking at me. And when I had all those eyes on me, I just kind of melt, and I'd forget everything. So it comes out in different ways. But I think if you take care of one of the points I have is to dress in something that you're comfortable with and
yes.
you know looks good on you, and for a woman, don't wear your skirt too short and different things like that, then your focus is off of yourself and onto your audience and your topic, and you don't have to feel self-conscious.
Oh, yes, because if you feel good about yourself, you definitely can do that speech just well. And as Jill and I said, you definitely have to know yourself. You know that. No, practice. And before you give your speech, always practice. That's the best way, because we can go over. And when you feel like you're being pressured, because they're going to give you a time limit, and they're going to show you certain colors in Toastmasters. And when you get to that red, that means you are getting close to your time. And most people feel that, okay, I'm getting close to my time, because that even happened to me. Okay, I'm going to hurry up, try to rush this, and you start definitely getting nervous. Because when you go over that time, then that means you don't qualify for that speech. So just make sure you practice in front of other people. And that will actually help overcome your fear of public speaking.
And start with small groups. And
yes.
maybe even read your speech a few times to your cat or, you know, somebody you're comfortable with before you go on stage so that you're comfortable with the speech.
Yeah, because I remember they used to always tell me, try to think of the audience as being naked. And I'm like, no, I don't want. It's not an ideal I want to have in my head. It might, you know, it's funny at first, but then you think about, like, really? No. Is there any other
No,
suggestion?
That's awful.
I don't want to look at you naked.
No, that'd be embarrassing.
It would. Now, Jill, go ahead, Jill.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just thinking about one of the things that you can do to break the ice. If you're nervous at first, this is from Barry Mayer, and he's a public speaker and the author of The Glass is Half Full. And he says to give an exercise or, you know, in the beginning, have them introduce themselves. That way it takes the focus off of you and you can calm down. And then every member of the audience or that you're calling on to introduce themselves is nervous because they think, oh, no, my turn's coming. And that takes the energy off of you, and you're not so nervous.
Yes, icebreakers are definitely the best. I think that's why they usually have what's the first thing they do, Jay? I just forgot the one. It's at the beginning of the meeting where you pick a topic and you have to talk on it. I just forgot what that's called. Just that quick. They talk on it. I think that's a good way to break the ice if you get certain people to talk on a subject that's really good. I did. Somehow I just totally forgot what it was called that they actually call that. But it's at the beginning of the meeting.
I'm not sure of the name. Yeah.
And I think those are good ways, like I said, to definitely break the ice. It replaces those feelings that you have.
Because usually the first few minutes are the most nerve-wracking. So if you're only speaking for a minute, you may not get over that fear for that minute, but you will if you keep going.
Yes. So that's definitely a good way. Introducers, let's see, you can use energizers to emphasize a point, transition to a new topic, or revitalize the group when energy is low, simple lead-ins. You can even do reviews on reflections, which they said that could be used to calm people down after an emotional session. I mean, it's just so much that you can actually do to calm down that fear. Because I used to could not stand when they have at the beginning of the meeting, and then they want you to talk about a certain subject, and I would be the main one, like, please do not call on me. Don't ask
anything. I'll be sitting up there Googling about the subject because I might have not kept up on the information in the news, and I'm like, darn it, just don't call on me because I do not want to give my opinion. I don't know what this is all about, what I'm going to say. Should I just walk out the little be thinking about it? Let me walk out. I got to use the restroom right quick.
Yes.
You be trying hard to find other things to do to just get out of it. Like, I do not want to talk.
I was just thinking at the beginning when I first started speaking, I would sit down because for some reason if I was at the same level as the people, I was more comfortable. But as I got more comfortable, I would stand up. But I don't like to always stand in front of a podium or a pulpit, whatever you call it. I don't always like to stand behind something. I like to be moving around a little bit and picking things up and, you know, using gestures.
Yeah, and that's what they would usually get on most of the people in Toastmasters. You got to come from behind that podium. Because it does.
Yeah.
You get comfortable. Oh, that's what it's called. Tabletop.
Lectern. Yeah, and then they call that the lectern at the Toastmasters. Yeah, table topics, yes.
I couldn't think of it off the top of my head, but table topics. I love some of them and some of them I don't. If I don't know the subject, I'm like, please don't call on me. Don't be funny and want to call me out. And then you try to look away, and that's the main one. They always want to call out the one who looks away. Like, man.
Do you ever change the subject? I don't know anything about that topic, but I'll talk about this.
Yeah, because sometimes they will have three different topics, and those are the ones I like, but I don't like when they have just one, and you're like, I don't know what to say. I'm on my phone Googling, like, okay, what's this all about? Like, please don't call me. And then sometimes I do want to be called on because I'm like, darn, I got a good answer for that, but they only take a certain amount. You're like, darn it, now I had a good answer, and you didn't even call me. I'm not going to come up the next time. Look, Jill, I don't want to come up the next time when you have something. Don't call me then.
I'm going to explain what table topics is really quick. It's where somebody calls on you out of the audience to speak on you. I think you have a minute and a half to speak on a topic, and they pick out a topic for you. And you only have from the time you leave your seat till you get to the front to think of what you're going to say. So that's kind of putting you on the spot. But, you know, that really helped me because I do a lot of interviews and I don't always know what the person will be asking me. So that really helped me to be able to think on the spot.
It does. And for other people who don't know, there are so many roles in Toastmasters. You have the grammarian. That's the person who picks out, well, actually, like when you write in a paper, you have your complete sentences. They're the ones who pick that out. If you didn't have a complete sentence, if you used the wrong word or you didn't use it correctly, they're the ones who notice that. Then you have the R counter who picks up on your arms, your long pauses, you know what I'm saying, all that.
Yeah.
What else? We have the timer. They keep up with everything, the evaluator time, all speeches of time. You have your 5 to 7 minute speeches. Then when you start getting advanced, it goes to 8 to 10 minutes. So it's on to help you. You have the Toastmasters. That's the person who runs the whole meeting. We have the evaluators who evaluate your speeches, give you great feedback. And they have different classes you have to go through training for, and it really helps you to become better because sometimes when you evaluate someone's speech, you think that you have to just be positive or kind of comfort them. It's not about comforting a person. You want to be as positive as possible, but you also want to give them the feedback that will help them, okay? Don't be nasty about it, but let them know, okay, next time, try not to use your notes because we do get comfortable on our notes. And We sometimes get upset when the PowerPoint is not working properly. And one good thing about that, if you're going to use a PowerPoint or anything, make sure you go in the day before your speech and make sure everything is tested out because that's one thing you don't want to give your speech and nothing is working.
That's right. Or have your little bullet points ready in case you can't use your PowerPoint. Have something prepared, because if that doesn't work, you might be lost. So have something else prepared.
And also not to read off the PowerPoint, because I could do that myself. The best thing to do when you're doing a because I know a lot of people do that. Even not even in text messages, everywhere else. You like, I can read that myself. I don't need you to read it to me. The best thing to do is just get bullet points and then explain it. So if you're going to have the words and you're reading it to me as I'm reading it, then it's like, okay, this is not going to work, you know. You're reading it and I'm reading it too. No. You're not reading to a child. Exactly. And you will lose your audience very quickly. So that's another thing. Don't read to the audience. Give them bullet points and then explain your bullet points.
You need to keep an eye contact, too, because if you're not looking at the audience at all, you're going to lose them. So if you're reading something, you're losing your audience.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that. You will lose them quickly. But, you know, they had sent me a Toastmasters magazine out, and one guy said, most of the time when you think they're not listening because they're looking away on their phone, they're actually looking. So he told the audience, he told them to keep doing what you're doing. Keep texting, because that's how they're getting more information, because normally they might be texting about the speech or the meeting. So I don't know how true that is. Maybe I need to try that one day.
I don't know. Well, I was going to say about your notes. The first time I gave a workshop for the writers group, I had notes, everything on my notes. And I kept losing my place on those notes. And so when I lost my place, I didn't know what to do or to say. And I shuffled through the notes, you know, and while people were waiting. So I decided not to depend on notes. I write a few bullet points just with keywords to remind me. And if I need to look at that, I will say, well, did I go through all this? And sometimes if you lose your place, you can even ask your audience, now, what was I talking about? Tell you, oh, yeah, you were talking about this. Oh, thanks, and then keep going. But don't let it fluster you.
Yeah, because it does get frustrating. And one thing I always learn, nobody knows what you have on your paper. They don't know what you're going to say. So if you mess up, just keep going. They don't know any better. They will know A from to Z. And that's just the way it is. You just have to keep going. The show goes on. And that's how I learned when I was interning for Channel 2. Tom Jones was like, just keep going. It's your story. Nobody on the news will actually know that you messed up, except maybe the news director if you sent them in a script or something like that. But the viewer is not going to know that.
Unless you say, oh, dear, I messed up. Then they'll know.
Oh, dear, I was nervous because I did that one time. I'm nervous, and they was like, well, we didn't know you were nervous. So now you're telling us, so now we know.
Yeah. It's not good to stand up in front of people and say, oh, I'm so nervous.
But, you know, we're going over all these tips, Jill, but sometimes it's still not enough for people to actually overcome. It's so nerve-wracking. Are there any other creative ways to really get them into talking in front of other people?
I think it's just practicing and, you know, going to the Toastmasters. And anytime you get a chance to speak, say yes, and then figure out how you're going to do it. But don't turn it down, because you'll punish yourself for turning it down.
Okay. Well, now
I think that there are many opportunities you'll have to speak, and the more you do it, the more comfortable you'll be. And when I finish a speech, I don't punish myself. I don't go over and over, I should have done this, I should have done that, because that just makes it hard on you. But if you can say to yourself, I did it. I got through the whole thing. Doesn't matter how nervous you were. You did it. So then the next time, you know, you can do it again.
Well, I would definitely have to agree with that. You don't want to overexert yourself by critiquing yourself too much. Once it's over, it's over. Let it be done. If you didn't do something right, okay, get it correct and do it again the next time. Because if you beat yourself up, it's not going to come out the way you want it to.
That's true. And I've listened to many of my radio shows and watched myself on TV. And when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking, I did that so badly. And when I listened to it, I realized that it wasn't bad. It wasn't as bad as I thought. So you're probably more confident or appear more confidently than you think you do.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, and you could critique your speech so you could learn from your strengths and weaknesses. But like you said, you don't want to beat yourself up about it. That's the worst thing to actually do. As long as you feel that you were satisfied, you were confident, and then we have a good day. Because everybody make mistakes when they speak. And I have seen some people who do a well, splendid job. And you want to be just like that person, but you're not going to be until you just overcome the fact that this is them and this is me. It takes time to get to that point. You're not going to walk in Toastmasters and say, bam, I got in one day. No. Mm-mm. It's going to take time. Jill, how long did it take you to become a well-spoken person in front of other people?
I think I'm still learning.
Okay.
But I've had a lot of practice now. When I first became a writer, I went to a writing group, and I would enter into a contest. And I would sit in the audience, and I would say over and over to myself, please don't win. Please don't win. Because I knew if I would win, I would have to get up in front of the people. So to the point where I am now, if somebody asks me to speak, I get excited. I might get a little bit of butterflies, but I'm excited because I know I have something to say, and I know that the groups that I speak to want to hear it. So, and if I see them writing notes in the audience, I think that's good because they want to remember what I said. So I'm excited about that.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm like you too, Jill. I'm still going, and I'm not as perfect like I need to be, but I'm not trying to be as perfect. I just want to be a well-spoken person where I don't do alms and all that. So I'm still learning, and being away for a while is really not helping at all, but I'm going to get there. I'm going to actually finish those speeches so I can get my communication, my competitive communication ribbon, and I can move on to advanced.
Very good.
Oh, and that's another thing, too. Anybody who's interested in Toastmasters, you can go online, toastmasters.org, or it might be Toastmasters International, and they have them everywhere. So if you're in Asia, Russia, doesn't matter. There's a Toastmasters everywhere for you. And one thing about all the speeches, you're not alone. They will have steps to teach you how to present your first icebreaker. They have, it goes all the way up to 10 speeches. So each speech will tell you what to do. They will give you examples. So you don't feel like you're alone. The only thing you might have trouble with, like I do, is coming up with a speech topic. But once you figure out, like Jill said, figure out what you want to do, what you know about, then you can easily write it and give it. So I think it's a great idea. If you haven't joined Toastmasters, please do. The one thing I mostly get, though, when I talk about Toastmaster Jill is, oh, I thought you was talking about toast. Yeah.
It's like giving a toast.
Yeah, that's the main
giving
thing
toast,
I get.
Like clinking glasses, that type of toast.
Yes, that's the first thing that comes out of people's mouth. I thought you was talking about toast. I'm like, no, not toast. I know you might be hungry, but no, this, and I love telling people about it. Even if they don't come to the meetings, you still know something about it. And if anyone is interested, we will be having another meeting around April the 12th. It's at Cascade United Toastmasters, which is at Cascade Methodist Church. It's on 3144 Cascade Road. So come out. It'll be from 9:30 to 11 a.m. and come out and support and show your love. They have different conferences, which is awesome, the spring conference, fall conference, and those are very nice. You meet all Toastmasters from around the world who will be giving speeches. They have humorous speeches, speech contests. Those are very awesome. I have went to a few. I haven't got the courage to speak in front of other people I don't know, and that's another factor I need to overcome. Speak in front of people I don't know. If I could do it in serving, I need to do it in for Toastmasters, so I'm going to work on that.
Very good.
Can you give people the site to where they can get your book, or if they even want to contact you, because since you're part of Toastmasters?
What was that last question?
Oh, I was saying, can you give them the site to your book, and also if they might want to get in contact with you since you are an experienced Toastmasters yourself?
Oh, okay. My name is Jill Ammon, A-M-M-O-N, Vanderwood, V-A-N-D-E-R-W-O-O-D, and you can find me on the web at www.jillvanderwood.com, and my books are available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, and the book is called Shaking Behind the Microphone, Overcoming the Fear of Public Speaking. And the book can also be ordered through a bookstore, but I don't think it's on the shelves yet.
See, now those are good points. You know, I was wanting to ask you, you said your nickname was Jill Pickle. How did that come about?
Well, it just sounded so much like Dill Pickle that people were calling me Jill Pickle. And I'm also a pickle maker, so kind of fits, too. I like to make dill pickles.
Okay, so that's a center enough. And I thought it was the real name, so you told me. She was like, no, that's not my real name. That's my nickname, and I like that. I do. That's something to think about when I probably get my next speech, just to overcome my nerves.
Oh, that's good.
Well, Jill, I really do appreciate you for taking out the time and coming on the show, and I'm glad we were able to reschedule again to get you here.
Thank you.
You're so welcome, and I hope people do go to the site and grab this book, because speaking is for everyone. It's just you got to take the time out to want to get out there and actually do it. As Jill said, if you think you're scared of that, try something that you're really scared of, and compare it to that. It's actually nothing. It just takes baby steps. It's not easy. Jill and I had to go through it, and you'll have to go through it. Find your Toastmasters organization and get in it, and it's still just the way we're saying it, Toastmasters with the S at the end of Masters. So, Jill, once again, I really do thank you for coming out. Again, audience, this is Jill Ammon Vanderwood, author of Shaking Behind the Microphone, Overcoming the Fear of Public Speaking. Please pick it up today. And let's continue a blessed day. Jill, you and your family, you have a blessed one. And I hope we can do this again very soon.
Thank you very much. I'm glad I go on your show. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Jill. You're welcome. Well, coming up tomorrow, which will be the April Fool's Day, let's be careful, be mindful that it is April Fool's Day, because somebody's going to try to play tricks. They're not even trying to get me tomorrow. But I am not fooling anyone. Tomorrow I will actually be having a show, and it will be with Dr. Daniel Kamen. He is an animal chiropractor. So we will be listening to him on that. It's very interesting. You know I love interesting things that I never heard of. So please tune in tomorrow at 12 o'clock p.m. Hit me up on my Facebook fan page, The Bright Side with Technisha. If you need to email me, do so at technishaday@gmail.com. I love to hear your feedback. I love to get comments when you do want to send those in. And as far as one of my people told me, they want me to get a rapper, so I will try to work on that. It's not easy trying to get everybody on the show, but I will do my best. But again, God bless, and I do love you for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.